everyone, this is Chris Keys for Open Your Guitar with dear friend Tim. Tim is from 311. 311 is a great band, and Tim's a great friend. How are you doing, Tim?
Good. Happy to be here.
Happy to do this. We did one about 8 or 9 years ago, so one of the first ones you did in Iowa City, so it's come full circle.
Nice,
So let's see what you got. I know you got a lot of PRSs, right?
We do. We have a lot of PRSs with us right now.
What's your main one, you'd say?
Main one is this blue one. Was this a blue number one? We call this one Old Blue.
I have another. So that's the one back in the day.
This one is, this is 99, if I'm getting it right. But it's had new hardware and things over the years, but it has been my main guitar since 99.
What have you dug about this particular model, this particular guitar?
Man, you know, I have a lot of beautiful guitars that they make, you know. And one thing I keep always coming back to is the stop tail. I have a couple of guitars I love that have like a Fender style Strat vibrato or tremolo, whatever bridge, vibrato or, and other things, but I always come back to this. I'm just so used to it, I think, you know, but I think it's just a comfort thing.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
I have guitars, definitely have guitars that sound better and things, but it for me, for live and recording too, it's comfortable to play. Really.
And you have no qualms with bringing it down the road with being such a special guitar that you've had?
No, that's part of it, I think, because just having the love in there. But it's nice, you know. It's cool. We got a Bob Vessels.
Ooh, with the tiki.
Tiki in there, but it's great. So this is the number one.
And is this one with the new pickups, or is...
This is the one, we were just talking a little bit about pickups. You know, we go through and been trying a lot of different pickups. This is a... Now, if I'll probably blow it, man. It's a Seymour Duncan. Donnie just told us. It's a Sentient.
In the neck, I think.
In the neck. And then, do you remember these?
Pegasus.
And a Pegasus. Thank you. But yeah, they sound good. We've been rolling with these we had these out. We put them in the summer. So they did about half the summer.
Yeah.
And they're with us right now. The other ones vary. You know, a lot of Seymour Duncan pickups all across there. 59s. You know, I like the Jeff Beck a lot, but these other couple have 59s.
I talked to you during the Stereolithic period with that album a couple of years ago, and you were talking about how you were kind of leaning towards PAF and lower output pickups. Is that kind of still your MO?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why you go there?
You know, I have this some of these amps, just so much gain in there that trying to go, you know, it helps with a clean amp and a dirty amp to keep them kind of in the same ballpark of balance. Definitely prefer that going into a clean amp. And then the high gain stuff like that Bogner, it's just got so much that it seems to help handle it a little bit more dynamically for what I got going through all this stuff. So
cool.
But yeah, just a little more dynamic maybe. But yeah, this has been good. I'm glad we got to give those a shout out. That was a friend of mine. Jeff Diamond recommended I try those, and we did, and Seymour Duncan's been so kind and generous to us over the years, but I had never heard of them before, so
I'm sure they're pretty, it's pretty nice to have this guitar as being your baseline, because you're so intimate with it, that when there is something changed on it, whether it's a bridge or pickups, you can hear that probably pretty instantly.
Absolutely.
Or defined.
Absolutely, and the in-ear situation too, with the mic right on there. You hear a lot of the specifics of the, you know, the frequencies or the tonal aspects of the pickups that, like you said, if he's in different guitars and everything, I might not pick up on.
Yeah.
And so you can really put them under a microscope, but it's fun. You know?
Yeah.
But we have a lot, you know, mostly I just play the one guitar all night.
And what's Blue's ride in, like, for tuning?
That's
is that
just
standard?
An A, yeah, okay. A440 or whatever, standard tuning. If I break a string on that, we go to this, which is the same guitar, just no paint on it. This one's actually older. Those are 59s, the Duncan 59s in there. But it is, there's not even a truss rod cover on there right now, but that's like, my eyesight's horrible. I can't tell if that first number is a 3. It's old.
Yeah,
it's
probably
a vintage guitar, yeah. So this is probably, isn't that horrible? I can't tell. It's that number anyways. I should have looked. It's old. This is like one of my oldest guitars.
Oh, right.
So anyways, it's older than the blue one, but it's built the same.
Is this one mahogany?
That is just a piece of mahogany, the neck, everything. So it's straightforward electric guitar, but it sounds great.
Do you feel that's darker than having like Maple Cap or?
You know, yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
I really do enjoy the Maple Tops, which I have down in here too. I have one of them set to a drop D situation, and that's this one. We have a handful of songs in drop D, and so I'll keep this one. This has got the PRS pickups in it, which I like a lot too. That is a 5815 sets in there. But this guitar I love too. It goes between drop D and just regular tuning so I can use it more.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes it's the number one, my main guitar if I'm not doing the blue, but I love it. This is from Transistor era for us, so I use this on that album.
Okay.
So it's 97 maybe or something. That one's easier to read, a 97.
Yep, a 95. Or is the 7 the first
one? I think the 7's the first one.
Okay, yeah.
It's not horrible, I don't know, but.
You're going to ask
10
Paul.
Top, yeah. But yeah, it's a beautiful guitar. Straightforward, just kind of deal there too, but.
And with your setups, are you asking Donnie to have high action, low action? Where are you kind of like, do you like to have a
I like
setup?
It low, but reasonably low.
Yeah.
You know,
without
I do
the
like
buzz.
It the easier to play, yeah.
And but, as we're going through all these, are these, yeah. I know that you're a big Ernie Ball guy, but
yeah.
what gauge are you?
They're all
going
10s.
With? Okay.
All of them are 10s, yeah. Except for this Schecter, which is my 7th string.
What's
it just comes out
on?
For one song
Which one?
Of ours called Mind Spin.
Okay.
And where, I try and do it on a baritone. I have a PRS baritone too, but I need the high group of strings for the outro of the song. The bulk of the song is down on this low B because it's just standard tuning once again. Mm-hmm. But man, they gave me this guitar years and years ago. I've had it for a long, ever since that song basically. And Chad, our drummer, wrote it. He writes a lot with the tuned down stuff, mm-hmm. you know. In fact, all these guitars are probably, I definitely use those on Sexton songs. But so yeah, I utilize this low on most of the song and then the outro's on the highs. But it plays great for, I have a hard time with the width of it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of I'm so used to it. But it's a little harder to play. But it is, it's a great sounding 7 string.
It always amazes me to see Steven from the Deftones play. Because
yeah.
he has those
yeah.
7 and 8 strings. They're like aircraft carriers, those fretboards.
I don't know how they do that, man, but it sounds cool. I love Steph. He's
yeah.
awesome.
And what's this last one here, the second one in?
This one is, I love this guitar. This is a Fuji Gen. It's, I'm a big fan of now I'm going to forget just because I'm on the spot, but I have a couple of, I don't even know if they're lawsuit guitars necessarily.
The Bernies?
Bernies, yeah. And I have a 335, a Les Paul, just killer guitars. And I met a friend in who worked for Fuji Gen at the time, and Kazu, buddy, Kayundai. And, but he hooked me up with this, and it's a beautiful guitar, man, I love it. It's a Fuji Gen, and it's a Expert FL is the model, but I use this a lot to record. It's just a great sounding Les Paul, and it plays real nice. Right now we have it in C sharp for a song off our new record, and it's only the low E string is tuned to C sharp. The rest of the guitar, A on up, is regular.
Huh.
So it's odd, but Chad, our drummer, wrote this really cool riffs, right? But we try to get around it every which way to see, okay, maybe I can do it with a normal E, but you can't because you got to bounce off this low C sharp. I tend to call it D flat because I'm started on trombone.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm thinking more about flats for some reason. but yes, so this one's C sharp. But typically, you know, for Halloween, I'm hoping to go as Ace Frehley. This thing will be a normal.
Ooh, nice.
Probably be the main guitar that night because I didn't bring my Bernie Les Paul, which
yeah, I
wasn't thinking. I left without a costume in mind, but
damn.
But yeah, I love this guitar.
You're going to put fireworks or sparklers on this?
We've like talked about that. Yeah, what to do,
the
you know?
With the smoke?
Yeah. They probably make something like a pickup nowadays. I didn't even look into it.
I'm sure there's something out there in the internet.
God, man, I'm going to figure that out. But yeah, love this guitar. And then the rest are PRSs,
no explorers.
You know?
No, not with us. Yeah.
No, man, I do love those. Those Explorers are sweet, but we just got, you know, these are backup. This is another one. It's the sister or brother to the natural top. Yeah, so I got these the same time back in 97, probably, I guess.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
But yeah, that's nice. A tortoise shell finish on there. PRS pickups. And these were brand new pickups when I got them. And I can't remember what they call them. They sound really nice too. No, I never remembered stuff like that. I mean, it's horrible.
You're too busy.
I remember
creating
how they sound, but yeah, but that's a nice one. And then the only other one we got in here, this is New Blue. And this was a gift from them years ago when we first did the SEs out, and they had an SE model that we did. And then they gave me this, was like a new version of my old Blue guitar, but it's really nice. It's nice and light, it feels good. And these were rolling with, that's a 5708 that we have in there right now. But we do change the pickups out a lot, but. So this one, so it's nice.
I think it's
too.
A cool story that I know that you kind of stumbled upon the PRS, the red, the cherry one you had, but you stayed with them because the story you've told me, and I'm sure countless other times, is that the band, you got broken down or you had a trailer fire or something,
yes.
And they sent you a guitar and you thought that was the coolest thing.
We had an RV fire, and long story, but the RV burned in my Volkswagen van again was being towed as the trailer to haul gear, and the key to the trailer hitch was in the van, the RV that was burning.
Oh.
Long story, but the fuel line caught on fire and was pulled over. We got out, but we lost all the gear, and we were on a route to a gig that night. We didn't play, but we played the next day, and I used a friend's guitar that day, but then the very next day we played a gig and I used a guitar they had sent like overnight to me and just saved the day. You know,
and at it's the like time, so you guys were such a low up and kind of band.
We're just starting, you know what I mean? And I love that PRS, you know, and then they were just so kind and didn't even question it, just sent it, and you know, it was such a nice gesture, and it really helped me out so big time on the guitar, you know. But they really nice folks over there, and it's amazing it's been that long. That's why I trip out sometimes when I look and it's like 97. Gee, that's like 20 years old, that guitar.
Right.
I don't know what vintage instrument is. 30
yeah, but
years
it's getting there.
Something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's continue with the rig here. You got the amps. So what are you looking at here? I've seen you numerous times. Normally I associate with the Diamond stuff, Spitfire, Phantoms.
Yes.
And I'm sure you still have those at home and use to record, but what's the story behind the Mesa and the Bogner?
A lot, that's a part of it that changes a lot. Okay. You know, there's on the output of the pedal board is one out for clean amp and one out for a dirty amp. And so the dirty amp late for a while has been the Ubershaw. I've had this Ubershaw for a long time. I like it, and or the Diamonds, you know, and stuff, and a lot of times rectifiers, boogie stuff, and so the clean side of it, you know, whether it was the Diamond or a lot of times boogie, a lot of times I have these Fender. Bob Blankenship took the Fender Deluxe. A couple of those and hot rotted them, kind of just did some upgrades in there and put them into head chassis. And
he's got great names for his mods, like he's got like the sour cream, and like that's what he calls some of his mods. He has the greatest names for those
mods. I should have asked him what that was.
Yeah,
you know, he does those sort of things for deluxes, you know, anyone can send it to him, whatever. But I kind of know him a little bit, I live nearby him, so he did those. They turned out really good, but I like being able to have an effects loop for the delays, you know, so typically. And the big wattage just for the 4x12s and stuff. All the deluxes sounded killer through the 4x12s. But right now I have a Mark V in there, which I just got recently before the tour, which I love. It's been great. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a big fan of the Mark IV, and mine sounds pretty good, but it's not, it's been a minute since I've traveled with it and stuff. And so Tim talking to Tim over there, and he hooked me up with that. But it's been great. So I'm just starting to get into the market.
Do you know what tubes are in that one?
That one's a 606.
Okay, yeah, because they can run all sorts of tubes, maces.
Yeah, you know, the thing I found too over the years is that, I mean, I like 606s. I just wonder, I don't know. It's weird. Like I love this 606 clean. All the channels in it sound great, the modes and stuff.
Yeah.
I've been, like tonight, it's just strictly for a clean tone up there, but the Mark II C Plus in it sounds killer, things like that, you know. So I have the foot switch up there, but live on two, I don't have it, I'm not going to it yet, just because I'm just comfortable with the clean right now. But yeah, it's a great amp. And the Uber, even the Uber, the clean in there will track with, you know, in the studio, some clean stuff.
And has that probably got 34s in it?
Just that
for
does,
British? Okay.
And I'm so used to, with the Diamonds and even with this Uber and things, I got used to the EL34 clean, which I would have never thought until I got back into the 606. And so that's one thing I'm finding, the feel difference in the different tubes, you know, from the on the clean side of it. But yeah, Mark V's been great so far, and lets me use the effects loop.
Yeah, I was gonna say, on top, is that where the Lexicon comes in, through the effects loop?
Yeah, these right here, one's a backup, but I just have one in the clean amp and one in the dirty amp, and it just, I like how they sound, but it's, you know, I wish there was another way, but things go so fast live, so I have Donnie changes it from song to song. So he'll just come out here and do it all analog style, which is great, and they sound good. It's simple and easy to look at and see where you're sitting on a delay time and change it if you have to. They're a little squirrely, but I'm just used to it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes like the squirreliness adds to the flavor of the volume, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Too on the note or too on dead set is almost jarring.
Well,
you like to have that little wobble.
Yeah, that's right, the wobble. In there. Yes, I like that, I do, and it seems like, I don't know, maybe if it's the Free the Tone, one of those has something that helps make it not on top of itself, so you don't cancel or whatever. But these are great. I mean, they're just kind of, they're old.
But they're still old friends. Good.
Yeah. That's from Ron St. Germain. He hit me to those whenever that was. It's a long time ago, but, you know, so it's just one each in the amps. And the Uber stays on the high gain side, and right now the Boogie just stays on the clean side of
gotcha.
It. But yeah, it's just, and then it's nice because if you want to swap out a dirty amp or a clean amp, it's easy to do it just and fit it in and use it. So.
And how are you running your cabs on stage? I know when we talked last time, you had the two outside cabs for your clean delays, and then you had the four stack.
Yeah.
And then you had the two center rows for your dirty setup. And now I see a lot less cabs. So.
Yes, that's right. I forgot. You know, I see some photos of that. It looks cool with the artwork on there and stuff.
Yeah,
this is downsized. So we got just one dirty and one clean. The dirty is right here, and he runs, that's what his mics. I tend to like this Heil to listen to. And then Scott at front of house, Scotch. He's our producer too, but he does our front of house.
It's awesome to bring him along.
It's great, yeah. He knows the music better than anybody, and but he's got his, you know, we both like that Heil, and then I don't know if it's a buyer dynamic, what that is right there. He likes that one for some of the loudness, and then the old 57 over there on the clean, and we try different things, you know. I just always go back. I'm just used to, I think, how the 57 sounds.
Yeah. It's kind of like we were talking earlier about blue. It's like a baseline. You always kind of know what you're doing, what you should get with the 57.
Yeah. So it's really straightforward. You know, we have these are actually diamond cabinets. They've been re-screened with some Fender screening, but those are just vintage 30s or
you know,
the standard kind of straightforward thing, but they sound good. I do like different speakers, but these are just good, and we like, once again, just know what they sound like and very usable. But it's funny that it just changes each year a little bit.
Yeah. You know, that's why you're always a great candidate for a Rick Rundown.
Yeah,
Not only do you love gear, but it always is changing.
Yeah,
and speaking of changing, let's dive into your pedal board because I see some differences here.
Yes, Yeah, yeah. Boy, it's changed a lot too, probably.
All right,
yeah.
Tim, we're at the mothership here. Walk me through your signal chain and talk to me about what's going on here.
All right. Well, we got, we're coming in right here, input there. And then the first thing after the, it sees is there's a buffer down in this box down there. And I wish I could remember what. It's a Dave Phillips special. He likes that at LA Sound Design. Mm. Did this board for me.
Yeah, they do good work. It's real beautiful and clean, considering how much you got going on.
Oh, man, yeah. I mean, it'd take me years to be able to, but yeah, Dave does a really nice job. And so it sees the buffer first, and then it's into the, this is a, I guess it's a 300L. They don't make that anymore. I like this volume pedal. It's probably my favorite one, but into there. Real simple. The tuner out just goes to the tuner. And then we're into this custom audio wah. And then after that, we're into, goes out of here into this box right here, this three banger. And it's got the Boss octave in it, this whammy, which it goes in and out, send and return there, loop kind of thing, out to the whammy, which is over here. And so I just access it on and off there. And then it's got the envelope filter right here, and that's a, I'll make sure I get it right, MuFX Microtron 3.
Yeah, it's Mike Bagel, or Bagel is the new company, or latest company.
And you know, my favorite is the Mutron 3 envelope filter. It's just the best, my favorite.
It's huge.
And it's huge, and the power issues for it and stuff. And then I still have those that I love on, and I have like three of them. One of them works perfectly. The other two are suspect, but then he made, after that, the bigger kind of gray one. And similar, I'll get it, I'll probably say it wrong, but it's a great sounding envelope filter too, the predecessor to that. And then that's the most recent one. And it sounds great. And the smallest footprint, easy power and stuff. So it fits nicely where we needed it to. But the filter there, and then I go, you know, we were talking about kids earlier. I have a daughter named Sunshine, and then a son named Tim Jr. And so eventually we get into this Timmy pedal, but I came across that, you know, the Tim pedal.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to get a Tim pedal just to get it. And then I saw the Timmys, and I was like, I got to get it just to, before I even read anything about it, I was like, I got to just hear it or get it because it's a Timmy, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, holy shit, this thing sounds great. And so I really like that as a kind of booster. But then I came across this Sunshine pedal, which our daughter's name is Sunshine. And so I was like, I don't care what it sounds like. It's called Little Miss Sunshine. And people are saying they like how it sounds. I got to try it. And then I heard it and I was like, damn, it sounds awesome. It really sounds great. You know, I'm a Phase 9. If that wasn't there, there'd be a Phase 90 there and an old script one. And that thing's really great. So I use it like for phasing and even Univibe kind of things.
Were you ever a fan of the 45?
And I love the 45 too. That's the thing, like to me, between the 45 and the 90, there was one incarnation that I had them both.
Yeah, I think it's called the 100, where you can switch between the two different.
And then the bigger one, like Garcia had that one. So they all sound nice, but this one is just one phaser to have on there, true bypass kind of thing. And it's easy to get at with the foot, you know, and that's, I do change that quite a bit over, you know, just to mess with it and, you know, from full on to all the way slow.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's nice to have a Sunshine and a Timmy on there. But so after the phaser, then I got this booster, and this is, it's called a Pegasus now. It would be his company, but Exact Tone Solutions, who are actually in Nashville.
Yeah, they're here, yeah.
Yeah, so it's an XTS Pegasus, basically. But before it was a Pegasus, it was this pusher pedal that I got from Greg, and I love it. I found out about that from John Ziegler forever ago. And so it's just a great, just clean boost, and it's easy to kind of adjust here as I need it. But it just seems to help me kind of cut a little bit, you know. I don't know if it's a treble thing exactly, but it helps kind of carve out a little space there in clarity wise. But then after that, we got the Way Huge Blue Hippo, which is Great chorus pedal. I really, really like that one. My all-time favorite might be a CS9 Ibanez, mm-hmm. and which I have a lot. I use that one a lot. But this one is just great, and I love all George Tripp's pedals. He's a cool designer. But this one's been on here for a while. I've been using it, and it got a nice vibe to it. Then after that, we hit this delay here, this analog 89, and that's just in a loop box there to kind of keep it, one thing to keep it cleaner sounding wise, but this is just way easier to turn on and off for
me
too.
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of about those Ibanez or Maxon pedals, or the trigger them is
sticky
kind of hard
for me. Yeah, so just to keep a flow with it. But after that delay, it goes to the AB box, and right there it's on the B side is the clean side. It'll send out of here to the Timmy. And I use that kind of as a cleanish boost, a little bit of gain on there just to beef it a little bit and get a little bit more going on. And then I have this XTS Precision Overdrive, which is like my favorite overdrive pedal. It's great. A lot of times we'll have two of them and kind of have one at a lower gain, one at a higher gain. But this Timmy is kind of the lower gain, and that's more of the higher gain. And together they sound real nice. Even like this pusher into these sounds great. So I tend to just combo them up a little bit. But this party loop then is this board out here. And that's just an extension loop out here that typically always has a looper. This is an Electro-Harmonix 720 right now, but it changes a lot what mm-hmm. looper. And this Synthwah is always out here, this DOD there, or Digitech, shit.
Did that take a place of the MXR? Because I know you used to have the two envelope filters, one for clean, obviously, the Mutron, and then the dirty one.
Yes, you know, this one is more just for like special effects, kind of synthy stuff.
Okay.
But I do miss having two of them, and it seems weird, but right now I just have the one, so I have to tap dance a little bit.
Okay.
But that is one thing that I miss with this compared to some of the other ones. But you know, be able to have it set up. That's why this on the clean, I totally, you know, have a couple delays out there too, but the reverb, tremolo, and this looper can have access to here too.
Okay.
So I can have it set up, you know, playing heavy, dirty, and then have super big reverb sitting there ready to cut to, or with the tremolo and stuff.
And all these effects, are they able to hit both amps, or are like that those clean effects
just
in the front
the clean
row, or,
okay, yeah, this front row
is
hits both amps actually.
Okay,
so that hits both and decided upon right here. When it goes to the dirty, it just goes right from here into the dirty amp, and then when it goes to clean is when you hit these gains, that party board, and then it hits the El Capistan and then the Free the Tone delay, and then out to the clean amp.
Gotcha.
So this one a lot of times I'll cut from the Bogner just dry, dirty, and then switch to clean and have it set up with these delays, real more wet kind of look right there, you know, so I don't have to switch and then set it up. But
well, man, let's hear some of these.
Yeah, dude, I should have said that when I was going through them.
No,
dude. My God, I'm so sorry.
I was just trying to get a lay of the land with your signal path.
Yeah, this I should have been when I'm sitting here talking about this thing. You know, it's just but it does all you need out of a phaser, man. I mean, it's rare I use it like that. But, you know, you throw some high gain on there and...
So that right now is just
like that's just the boogie right here, the clean. Yeah, so when it comes off the board, the clean amp, the B side of it is the clean amp, it comes to the Mark V. And the A output there of the AB box comes to the input of the Ubershaw. And so this is just always set up on the high gain. And then in the effects loop, it has this PCM42 for delays.
Okay.
And then this, the Mark V has its own PCM42 for delays. And then those get changed by Donnie, my tech, song to song basis, kind of. So it's in, I get them, you know, right pretty close usually to the tempos. But,
and how are you making changes, like to reference the newest, latest album, Mosaic, too much to think, like a song like that, where you start out real clean, and then at the end, towards the end, you have the outro, like the real kind of, I guess, fuzz solo or whatever you're doing.
That's Nick too, so you should ask him about that.
Okay, we'll ask Nick about that.
That's
but
a
how
cool
are you
tone start?
Is that so? Is that just coming through the Mesa then, like the clean tone?
It actually is a clean tone with, like the Timmy and the precision on together, kind of just to give it some beef. And then there's a lot going on in there because I use the L cap for the in the choruses for the ambient kind of wash in there. And you know, sometimes a couple of the new songs, especially I'm using the Blue Sky reverb with modulation and some things like that, which is kind of nice. Like it's so it just gets big kind of, so that's like on a song called Perfect Mistake on the new record. Say we're just playing with the dirty dry and then stops and then it cuts to just clean, just breakdown kind of with that reverb. So you know, set up like this, I'd just be from the dirty and then rock, 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 and then, you know, so there's kind of the specialty stuff out here. You know, for fun, you throw in one of these. Just weird kind of synth sounds, stuff like that. But, yeah, man, there's a lot, you know, I wish I would have used it when I was talking about it, but... You know, it's like it's tasty. That
yeah, and that's like that would be like a tone I hear like with Amber or Love Song.
That's Amber, Love Song, yeah, Champagne. You know, and it's a nice tasty one. It's so, I love envelope filters. There's a lot of them, so many of them out there, and they all have their different personalities and stuff.
How did you get into love with them? I know that you're a big Dead fan, but like, what was the aha moment where you're like, oh, this, I get it now. Cause like envelope filter is kind of a weird thing to get like into.
It is, man.
Do you have a moment where you're like, okay.
It must be, I mean, if I can say Acid and Jerry Garcia imprinting me somehow, because it's just so expressive to me. And the way he uses it especially is just the best. But even Homie and Slipknot or whoever, you know, using them, they're just cool. I like the just filtering kind of things are cool. But yeah, so it, you know, that's the core of what I need. You know, there's over the years, there's so many different little specific, you know, I could have a whole nother side over there if I really wanted to be authentic about getting the exact sense.
Well, you're pretty authentic right now. I mean, you got a lot of analog gear out
here. Yeah, that's great. And then it's nice having it out here to be able to tweak on the chorus, the rates and things like that.
So. What about, I'm just quizzing here, what about like old song, Beautiful Transistor? People are probably interested in how you try to get tones from something that's recorded so long ago.
Like
the intro.
Like the octave kind of thing. Yeah, that's one, the octave pedal is the oldest pedal I've ever had, or the one I've had the longest or used the longest, other than a tuner. Although, knowing me, maybe I had the octave pedal before the tuner, but I don't know. But so that one, it seems like we're pretty, like we both know when, hey, this is time to apply the octave and to single note stuff. And we do a lot of dual leads and things like that. Sometimes we'll use the octaves when we're doing dual leads and stuff. But, you know, really it's just, I know it kind of needs to happen for the sections and then I'm going to use what I got out there to try and get her done. But the octave's always with it. Like, you know, like if I had to have one thing off there, that's probably the one I'd take.
Really?
Yeah. I get, you know, I'd hate to have to do that.
Well, we're not going to restrict you, but yeah.
Yeah, there's. I mean, it's great. Nothing sounds better than taking your guitar and plugging it in the amp. That's the best. And then it's like a from there compromise, you know, and trying to make it... you know, whatever, have all this stuff and have it still sound good when you're not using any of it and things. So, but it's fun. It's like a little, it's like a hot rod or something, you know, you're just tweaking on it all the time.
Killer, Tim. I appreciate it, dude.
Oh, man, Chris, brother. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, man. Yeah. We'll talk to the rest of the band.
Yeah.
All right, we're on the other side of the stage now. Got Nick here. Nick, how you doing?
Real good.
Good. Thank you very much for taking the time.
My pleasure.
Looks like you got a lot of Gibsons here, so we'll get right to it. Which one's your number one or the one you probably play the most?
Well, my brief history of guitars is that first I loved Les Pauls. I got a 63 Les Paul gold top that I found in a pawn shop on a camping trip to Canada. I got that when I was like 14
when
my dad found that. sadly, as often happens with Les Pauls, you lay it on the ground, someone stepped on it and broke the neck. So it was super tragic. But Les Pauls have been probably my main thing. So I play a Les Paul on the older songs, always on like Down and Homebrew. It's just so compact and just has that sound. And then later I started to get really into hollow bodies. 335s, 355s. I usually modify them somewhat.
What took you down that path from the Les Paul? Was it a tonal thing or like a kind of a, just to be different than Tim with him having the humbucker?
The jazzy tone, yeah. To have the warm jazzy tone, you know, playing in the neck pickup position. And then I found to give it a little bit more bite, I put a P90 in the neck position. Okay. And keep the humbucker in the bridge. I usually put my own little Hexum truss rod cover on there. And then somewhere along the line, I was given this Flying V, which
just screams rock and roll.
It's louder than a Les Paul. It's so hot. This one has the robot self-tuning features, okay. Which we probably don't even use anymore. But honestly, the reason I like this is just because of the moves. You know, so this is like my Beautiful Disaster guitar. But then most recently, I've kind of found the best of both worlds is the Johnny A, and they don't make a lot of these. It's a very expensive guitar, but it still has the hollow body sound of a 355, but then the smaller body is just, it's a little more comfortable. I can move around with it more, and this thing just sounds great. So I've been playing this all summer, and it's kind of like my new favorite. And I talked to Gibson about taking this even further, of doing something kind of similar as like a signature guitar for me.
Have you ever gotten your hands on, I think it came out about a year or two ago, is a Les Paul, but it's called the ES Les Paul, which has the semi-hollow construction with the F holes.
Yeah, I saw that. I haven't played
it. So it gives you a little bit of both.
I did have a hollow body Les Paul back in the late 90s, but I wasn't into the hollow body sound as much at that time. Mm-hmm. That's really been about the past 10 or 12 years. I've really kind of needed that hollow body just to make it sing more. And when I'm playing clean in the neck position, just gets that jazzier tone. I mean, my favorite guitarists are, you know, Wes Montgomery, Grant Green. It's just something about a hollow body.
Yeah.
That has a magic to it.
And when you use the P90 in the neck, is that more for cleaner tones or for like your overdrive or like a dirtier sound?
That would be for cleaner tones.
Okay.
Or a semi-dirty.
Okay.
But yeah, when I'm full distortion, then that's going to be the humbucker in the bridge position.
And what about, I know you like Tim, are Ernie Ball family. So what strings or gauge are you currently using on your guitars?
I moved from 10s to 11s about 10 years ago. I just felt that a lighter gauge string was just too rubbery for me. And I would lose control and overbend.
Mm-hmm.
And also just knowing how Stevie Ray Vaughan played like crazy, you know, thick strings.
Yeah.
There's just something about, it's a more visceral thing to have the heavier strings in there.
Almost like fighting with it,
yeah.
The guitar.
And then one thing I didn't mention, I also fell in love with Bigsby's, the Bigsby tremolos, any of our new songs for the past 8 or 10 years have had a guitar with a Bigsby on it. And to me, it's, you know, the perfect amount of bend. It's not like for like heavy metal dive bombs. It's just for like to make it sing.
A little textural.
Yeah, and especially when you have reverb and you can give it kind of a surfy slide sound just by it, just a slight bend down to just make it fill up the bandwidth more.
Yeah.
And also when you're soloing, you do it, combine a bend. I never got great at like, you know, bending and vibrato at the same time. I'm more of a do a bend and use the whammy bar.
And it looks classy too, especially on a guitar like that with the gold hardware and the gold Bigsby.
Yep.
And what about picks? Are there any specific picks or like gauge picks that you go, or you just kind of grab whatever you get your hands on?
I don't know the measurement, but I moved to a stiffer pick. You know, I've always just believed in remaining teachable, and I've actually had like a bunch of different guitar teachers that I would, because I realized there was gaps in my knowledge that I wanted to fill in, and one of them kind of explained to me that you can play faster with a harder pick, so I use a fairly stiff Tordex 311 pick.
Nice. And here's where we would transition to amps and effects, but that's behind your little wall of speakers here, so we'll just talk about that. Mesa Boogie, I imagine, if I had to take a guess.
Yeah.
What kind of amps are you using? And I saw that there's two back there. Is that one like a backup? And is
yeah,
that, okay.
There's a backup. The Rode King too really can do every amp that you want. You can do a nice Fender clean, classic, heavy, dirty, mid gain settings. And so that's been the amp for me for quite a while. Sometimes I'll actually use a two amp system where I'll have a Fender, you know, with an open back, because that has a slightly different clean. Sometimes I use two amps, but lately I've just, on this tour, just had the Mesa.
The Rode King.
Yeah.
And are you using pedals to drive that, or do you have I know Mesas have the channel switching capabilities, so are you using the different channels to get your overdrive, or are you using pedals to hit the front of the amp to get your dirt or drive?
Generally, I let the amp do the distortion. I've got pretty much three gain settings that I'll use, like a full jazzy clean, just with no gain, or a mid gain, slightly distorted, and then full on heavy sound. But as far as pedals, I do have a kind of a Tube Screamer type overdrive, but I only use it like halfway. It's the Analog Man King of Tone.
King of Tone, yeah.
It's a great one. Kenny Wayne Shepherd is a friend of mine. He told me, he's like, you got to get that one. And there's like a waiting list to get one. And I do use a compressor pedal, a Boss compressor pedal sometimes to even things out more for clean.
Okay.
But then sometimes like on the dual leads that me and Tim will do, I'll have the compression on and then the delay is going to be in a loop. So it's the delay part isn't being redistorted. It's after the preamp. But generally, you know, I was just the lead singer for a long time and I got into playing guitar more and more gradually. So I'm so busy running around that I've got, I call him Cousin Eric, my tech, doing the switching for me. So he knows the songs as well as I do. And he's doing the effect switching and channel switching for me back there, you know, as the song goes. So that's like been a great asset for me to have a tech. He's also a great player too. Mm-hmm. So, I've never had a pedal board out front because I'm just so busy running around.
You're pretty active on stage. And then, yeah, to have another thing to trip over, especially with Tim's huge setup over there.
Yeah.
And I asked Tim and he deferred to you because he said that's your part. I was curious if you could tell us the tonal makeup or the equation of the outro to Too Much to Think, where it goes into that last little solo bit.
That's the Blue Box, the MXR Blue Box that I first heard in, you know, Fool in the Rain, Led Zeppelin. That bloody-doo-dee, bloody-doo-doo-doo. Like, that's just such a killer solo. So I started using one of those on the Uplifter album.
Okay.
And then that became the signature. I mean, it just overdrives everything, but it's kind of an octaver, it's kind of a synth, it creates an extra synth tone, but it really evens everything out. So if you look at the waveform, it's just like solid. There's very little dynamics in it. That was at the end of Too Much to Think, that solo, and the solo that you hear on the album was the first draft of that.
Oh, wow.
I put on the demo, and I was like, I don't think I can beat that, just use that. So that's fun to do live because it ends with such a big solo and the music stops and it's me doing a big whammy through the Blue Box at the end. That
very climatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about, I guess the only other question I have for you would be delay. Is there a specific delay that you like to have or use on your board?
Yeah, you know, I used to use more rack stuff, like Rocktron stuff that I got in maybe in the mid-90s, and then I've moved more towards analog pedals. The Strymon stuff is okay. Great, like the Blue Sky and the Time Machine, those are great reverbs and delays, but I got a lot of great pedals back there, and I've tried to not keep adding and adding and adding because it makes the rig that much more complex. Yeah. One of the signature tones that I still cannot do without is the ADA preamp that I got back in like 1994. That's the down sound.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. It has a T-wah in the distortion. I've tried to recreate it with because that thing's been discontinued forever.
Yeah.
It's hard to find. And it's pretty temperamental. If it gets too hot, like it did on Summer Tour a lot, there was some times where it would overheat, so I've actually been looking for a backup for that. But that piece is very distinct, so like I carry that one extra. There was a few years when I didn't have the ADA, and it just wasn't the same just to use regular distortion. And so that's kind of a signature piece of gear that I can't do without.
And do you have an octave pedal on your board, or is that something that just Tim kind of rolls with?
Yeah, I use really the Boss Octaver is the signature 311 sound. Yeah. So I have one of those, but I also use a POG, polyoctave, for certain solos that I want an octave above and below to really thicken it up. But that's really, I don't play that as much as Tim, like that's his thing. Like
yeah.
He calls it, you know, high T, high testosterone, octaver with distortion.
Are you both running for like the intro to like Beautiful Disaster? Is that one where you're probably both running the octave?
No, I don't use an octave on that. That's just pure distortion, no pedals whatsoever.
Killer.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, I appreciate you. Thank you for taking the time.
I'm going to talk
to Peanut. Thank you.
All right.
Last but not least, Peanut was kind enough to hang with us.
Oh, there's going to be continuity. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're just going to
keep... Don't watch this out of order and screw our world.
This is a flow. And we're to the last of the chain, which is the bass player.
Yes.
Not least, but last.
No,
it's
fine.
Wait.
Whatever. I didn't want the attention of being a lead singer or a lead guitarist. I mean, I started on violin and was a part of like a ensemble to begin with, and always loved bass players. So for to pick up the instrument just made all the sense in the world.
Well, we were going to work with Chad, but he was busy, so we're going to talk to you about your gear.
He knows a lot about my gear.
Well, Peanut, you're a Warwick guy, so talk to me about what you would consider your number one. What's your number one bass that you got over there?
My number one bass, and I am a Warwick guy since 93, is my signature series. My main bass, well, that's not even it. That's my other signature series. This is my signature series 3 that came out in 08, and it's basically a Warwick Streamer 2.
That's what you started on, right? That's how you got to kind of get into the company?
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I went to them when they were in Santa Barbara still, or gosh, maybe even before that, when they were even closer to Los Angeles, but whatever, and got a maple and a 5-string, and after we had a RV fire and my Tobias burned.
Ooh.
Yeah, which I swear I've never paid them for. And I've talked to them, I tried to pay them. They're like, no, you're fine. Like,
it's off the books.
I owe you $500 from a million years ago. And they're like, no, forget about it. So I went to Warwick after falling in love with Norwood and what he was doing with Fishbone and how just greasy and awesome and crunchy all those sounds were that he was getting out of an instrument that looked like it was just freshly cut from a tree. So for them to greet me so warmly even back then and to make a signature series for me, you know, close to 20 years later, was pretty much the biggest compliment I've ever gotten from an industry.
I know you're a big Jack Bruce fan, and so then he's in the Warwick family. He's been in there since the 70s, and that's cool to be right there.
Yeah, there's a cool pedigree. I mean, their roster has exploded of late, and it's amazing. And to see it grow and to see the company and it's a big family, you know, like you'd want your team to be. And I think most good ones that last are. I mean, the band, us, and Warwick, and just just good music that lasts has that kind of mindset. Like, we're going to do this because we love it, and we're going to do it because we love doing it together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what is this? What is
what it? Have things that you have made it your own from just being another streamer too?
Right. We changed the top, and we changed the back. My thing, my really one solid addition was to have Purple Heart cut through the center of it.
Oh, all right.
And sandwich in between the face and the body. But other than that, it was just kind of like a committee of figuring the woods out. This is Australian Blackwood Burl, and the back is Asphalia.
What was the idea, or what was the reason behind going with the Purple Heart in the in-between for the sandwich?
I mean, kind of more symbolic than anything.
Okay.
I'm Scottish, English. I love the royal purple. Mm. There's something in it. And I know it's a good tone wood, but really it was more like, if I'm gonna do something different, it's gonna be, I don't know, reflect my personality.
Yeah.
It'll be something different that may or may not make sense.
It makes sense now, because it's for sale.
Yeah, well, no, just like, I'm gonna force this in, whether or not like it's gonna make it sound better or not. I'll make it sound better.
And yeah.
These have always felt like, even in 05 when we got the first one, and it was even rawer than this, the sandwiching wasn't done as well, and it hasn't lasted as well as this has. And I've recorded 5 albums with this now. It's getting a really good thumb divot where I place my hand. And I don't know, it's held up fantastic, and I've beaten the living shit out of this bass.
And really are these have. The pickups that people would associate with your signature model, or are these ones that you swapped in?
Warwick never used Seymour Duncan's before. It was kind of another thing that I forced them into. It was like, mm-hmm. That's what I really want. They wanted to go with another, like a German company, MEC, that I like as well, but they're real standard on
yeah.
their instruments. Like, well, if it's gonna be a signature series, let's talk about what we're gonna customize. Because mm-hmm. I wasn't really interested in making a body style. I'm not a designer.
Yeah.
But I love picking out boutique pieces. I can make a good instrument from the template that they've already laid out. And just being kind of a Flea nerd and loving the Music Man kind of sound, it was fun throwing the giant humbucker on the back of it.
What's the idea about having the single coil or the neck pickup there slanted like in that direction?
Comfort. It probably brightens up that this low end and makes it speak a little bit more ever so subtly. But I don't know. Nothing specific.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a feel thing. I'll play here a quarter of the time. I'll play here a quarter of the time, but you know, more than half of the time I'll be bridged up right here, and I'm just so used to it now.
Yeah. And what about preamp? Is there on board?
Yes. Yes, I'm all taped up right now. or no, I'm not. I'm just taped up on the back. But yeah, there's an onboard preamp. Oh, it's hard to get into. If anything's breaking down on this instrument, it's this plate. But it's a million times better than my wall, which I just got. I got an 88 wall.
Ooh. How'd you score that one?
Got this on reverb.com, which is a fucking dangerous place to go.
I was gonna say, that seems like
a dangerous place to go. It's number...
Beware, kids.
3061, and it's olive facing, it's mahogany body, and it's Indian fucking rosewood on the neck, and I love this thing. I just got it refurbished. I got it for like $3,000, and put it like another $500 into it, and it looks as good as some of the $7,000 ones on there.
Yeah.
And I love it that it's kind of beaten and loved. It was probably in some bar in
Ireland.
Definitely
a player.
Yeah, it's a player, and I wanted that. I didn't want something pristine, but I love having kind of like a piece of history and taking it out on the road, and I'm just happy I found it.
Are you using like the first one you pulled out and this one different tunings or different songs, different eras of the band? Or
I've soloed with this one time. I'm having little problems kind of dialing it in. I haven't gotten it exactly where I want it without having to get into my amps and try and make it sound better, and I'm not going to do that because that's not its place. My main bass kind of controls all the settings on my amps.
Gotcha. Yep. And what's the last? I see a Rickenbacker.
Well, I've got a 74 Rickenbacker here that I got from some fisherman in Portland, Maine, and I love this thing.
How'd you get it from a fisherman?
Oh, I'm just making that up.
Oh, okay. I was like, Jesus.
No, I got it on eBay from Portland. Okay. Okay. Everyone's a fisherman in Portland.
Right?
Yeah, that's all I see.
I just assume.
Yeah. We always play on a pier when we're there.
Why not have a wide sweeping generalization?
Yeah,
Portland,
that's what
fisherman.
I'm doing. Yeah, it's for the audience. Quit destroying my illusion. And the only thing I've changed a couple of things. I changed the tuners out, and I put a new guard on here because it looked like garbage. Garbage. Ooh. And I recorded the song Wildfire with this thing because Nick wanted a really dirty sound. And I was like, oh, I'm capable of a completely horribly filthy sound with this thing.
And that's just from that bass gives you that horrible, gnarly sound.
Yes, just mid-range on 1,000, going through the Sans amp with the presence just jacked. Totally. And it's so much fun. It's really hard to control on stage because this is a total microphone. So it's the only thing that I have at all that I have to worry about feedback.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's so fun. And people, I see gear nerds loving when I pull it out because they know what song we're going to play. And it's a really,
yeah.
It's a fun song to listen to, and it's a fun song to perform, and it's a fun song to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
just
is
kind of in general.
A great equation.
Yeah, you got to have both. I mean, I love performing as much as I love, you know, like playing a technically difficult song, but I just like being on stage.
Yeah.
I think the thing that makes us last long is that it is interesting for musicians to enjoy our music, most of it, and then for the fans too. Just like it makes sense. It doesn't, all of it doesn't go over their head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, talk basses. What do we got here? We got more Warwick.
Yeah, we've got Warwick Hellberg stuff all the way up and down the line. I went with the high cab and the big cab as far as filling out the space.
Are these 10s or 12s?
These are 10s.
Okay.
And these are 18s.
Oof.
And there's one facing down.
Does this?
It's like PA,
yeah,
style,
I bet.
Forced air.
And
awesome.
What's, why, I guess, always is bigger and better, right? But why not a 15 instead of an 18? Why the 18?
You know, I've had 15s, and I've had 18s, and I've had 10s, and I've had 8s, and gosh, who knows how small. That's probably about as small as I ever went. But
yeah.
And SWR and Randall stuff when I was a kid, which was hilarious sounding. It was always like plasticky sounding. So, and it's been forever since I've really enjoyed a rig. Just something about doing in-ear monitors, of course, has mm-hmm. changed what you want to hear on stage, but I've never been more happy with when I could dial this in to getting the sound out of it I want to. SWR stuff was always a little quiet for me, but pure. And when they started talking about how quality the components were that they were putting in, what Jonas wanted to do with making a rig and making it be like a Neve on the road, I was like, you can experiment on me. So we worked it out. And these are some of the first cabinets that they made. There's incredibly low numbers.
Oh, before, so you got these
before,
early.
Yeah, before 100 on some of them, and then a couple of them are like 4s and 5s. So, and again, I've beaten the living crap out of these things. And they've held up great.
Yeah.
It's too bad that more people can't get them because they're so expensive, but they're amazing touring rigs. And maybe sometimes that's the cost. Like, I wouldn't want to buy this twice, but I've beaten this up more than you know,
yeah.
Anyone would ever need to, and it's held up incredibly. The only thing I need to do is tighten the screws because it'll break itself eventually.
Yeah, well, imagine with those 18s rattling.
Yeah, and I've changed out the speakers a couple of times, but or maybe just once, over at least probably approaching 10 years.
And so then you got the Warwick, you got the actual preamp, and then you got the power amps.
Yep.
And then are you running both of those at the same time, or is that just one being a backup?
I am running both. Those are the bottom ones, and these are the top ones. I can do 4 more with this whole rig, and that's how I run in amphitheaters.
Wow.
When we do that, and that is so much fun. There's nothing like it.
I bet.
Yeah, it's a responsibility that you got to keep in control, because you know you got microphones on stage left and right, and you don't want to hurt people.
Yeah,
which is altogether too possible with this much power, and it sounds great. Again, the amps have held up just incredible. I mean, they're getting bounced around hundreds and hundreds of miles, tens of thousands of miles over the course of a tour. It's great. The radial has simplified everything. I had a sit down with our like monitor guy and my tech, and they were like, we found this thing that we think will really help and you know, make your system really, really clean and make the bass switching, which is essential to my show, make it just streamlined. Mm-hmm. So having the radial in there is really nice. And really super easy to use, especially with the instructions glued on top of it.
That's always the key.
It makes it easier. You know, we're musicians. We don't want to have to think about it.
Yeah.
But to go A to B really easy, the mute's right there on the front. We've got a foot pedal for it as well when I tune. It's a good system.
Cool.
We're ready for TV. We're ready for stage.
You guys are going places, I think. Let's talk about your pedals.
Yeah, of course.
All right, Peanut. You're at your little stomp station here. Talk to me about what you got on the board and what you're using and how you're doing it.
In the first album, I had a Big Muff and used that on a song called Hydroponic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the studio, Eddie Offord, our producer, had a, I don't know what he had. It was some onboard whatever, some Eventide,
mm-hmm.
right? And he dialed in some incredible envelope sound. And I'd never been able to recreate it. Like, made it sound like a lightsaber.
Yeah.
More or less, like a bass lightsaber. Not a soprano lightsaber like over there. But, so I figured out how to do that. And with the Big Muff still, and I've been through a dozen over the years, but not like Tim and Wawa pedals. Tim's got probably a garbage bag full of Wawa pedals. But I do that with the MXR bass envelope and the Muff, and I'll throw the Octaver on there if I want to make it really, really juicy and play it an octave up. And I'll do that throughout the show. I'll do it in all mixed up. I throw it around. It's kind of my go-to.
Yeah.
Since it's an octave up, it's easy to transpose, and it's just makes a dynamic, you know, like a mm-hmm. huge overload. And if I want to control it at all, anything sound-wise, I really love my Diamond compressor. I rely on that a lot in the stage show. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Kind of depending on, I can't tell if it's the power or the room or whatever.
All those different variables.
But I use it in the studio a lot when we're rehearsing more than on record. And on stage, solo-wise, I'll rely on it. But most of the time, live, it will squash things too much, and I want to hear everything kind of breathe, especially the envelope. I mean, that's the point. I'm like, why isn't that? And I'm like, oh, there it is. Like, and then, bing! So, got to have a Sans amp. I learned that from Bob Rock. It's just, you got to overdrive and you know, fuzz are so different.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as a kid I couldn't have cared less, but I'm a 43-year-old man, and it's fun to have different tools for the weapon.
Why not? Do you feel with the Big Muff that it ever takes too much of? I mean, I think the critique of a fuzz, whether it's guitar or bass, it takes a lot of that low end out. Do you feel like that particular model, or do you have a setup that compensates for that kind of reduced bass?
Scotch, our sound guy, who we've done albums with as well, knows what I'm going to do backwards and forwards, mm-hmm. and he's taken a dry signal, so he
has that.
Yeah, he won't lose low end.
Okay.
Yeah, not much. Oh yeah, look at that dramatic loss of light. You guys have clouds here.
Yeah, I mean, that's we do.
Yeah, it's incredible.
We commissioned him for the shoot.
And that was always the problem with the Big Muff, is like, God, you know, I heard it from everybody in the band too. Like, your bottom just disappears. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care. It sounds great. I'll be back. I'm taking a little break from the low end to, you know, break some windows with my chainsaw of noise. And then the loop station and my delay really are mostly just for soloing.
That is a huge delay.
Yeah, I had two or three on my board at one time.
I remember you used to have a timeline, and I can't remember the other one you had, but yeah.
I had the timeline on there, and I had another, like an analog, like an MXR something or other, and I why not have the best on there, and having the Moog, it just makes my day. It's fun to play with, but usually I just set it for tapping and not too much feedback, and just kind of do whatever I'm gonna do. Lately I've been, loop-wise, I've been trying to do the Stranger Things arpeggio into Heathens by 21 Pilots. But usually people don't get it, or I loop like shit. One or the other. And that's been really fun to try getting better at. The only crazy thing is that I'm doing all my experimentation on stage.
Right in front of people.
Yeah, I don't have a looper at home. and I don't know. It's fun. It's fun to try it. It's fun to get it right. It's great to be able to just level it out. If I didn't get the loop right, I'll just solo without it.
Yeah. You know, and I'm sure
I can cover my bases.
That's a way for you to still feel, I guess, reinvigorated on stage. You know, so I'm sure some bands that tour for a long time, they get into a groove and necessarily almost a rut where you guys change your set list. You do perform these solos. So yeah. You're trying new things. You're trying to do the Stranger Things.
Yeah, why not? It's fun.
Yeah.
It's an exercise in who knows what's going to happen. And you've got to try for something new. I couldn't imagine doing less and less tricks. You know, more and more tricks is fun. Or if not more, different ones here and there. Just try something out. I mean, we're in a creative position. We might as well take advantage of it.
Peanut, I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thank you for hanging with us and talking about your gear.
Yeah.
Come out to see these guys do their tricks. Rig Rundown.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.